you know, Patty and I were talking briefly on the phone, things, and Van and I were too, you know, like, you know, like that women now, you know, have so much impact that my sister, I'm doing a lot of work for now, she's a nurse at that time, you know, that's what my mother's school teacher, that was like what women were, you know, worked in a shop maybe or something like that, but women really didn't take a lot of the balls and say we're going to run this damn job like my wife does sometimes, you know, and you know, and just you know, the whole black thing when I was in Vietnam, Martin Luther King was killed, Robert Kennedy was killed, cities began to burn down. I thought there was more shit going on back in the world than there was where I was in Da Nang and a little bit north of Da Nang and stuff. So I just was like, wow. So when I came back, you know, I felt like I had missed something in a way, I think. And but when I went up to the city to visit girlfriends, and I eventually did marry one of them, and the girl that I saw the Led Zeppelin first American tour with, you know, like it just wasn't enough. It was like New York and was so already selling it to me, you know, and I knew what they were selling, you know, and I didn't want to buy it, because by the time it seems like, you know, like you could get a Sgt. Pepper's patch for your sleeve or something like that, and I was sort of, you know, reluctant, you know, and I didn't put it down, but I was sort of like, no, but Atlanta had the nicest kind of climate for the mentality I had at that time, just getting out and everything. It was sort of like, it was welcoming, it was warm, it wasn't like what I had experienced like in New York or Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. was sort of like, still had that small town hospitality.
The Southern hospitality. Real
nice people,
you know, and my mother's Southern, my dad's Northern, but you know, so I always was coming down to Galveston to see mom's folks, and I always felt like, yeah, it's more of a genteel way about, you know, talking even, you know, just talking with you guys. I feel right at home and everything, and we might not have been all the same ages. You guys could have been just different, but like I'm much more, when I'm back, I haven't been back there since my dad died, but like, you know, it's still kind of, you know, I don't know how my mother must have truly loved my father, because she married him. She's still up there. He's been dead since.
She liked him. So
yeah. She never lost her accent.
Where's this?
Right outside of Manhattan in a little town called Bayonne, New Jersey, Jersey City and all. Yeah. And I left there to join the service. I mean, I never even counted no more, you know. But, you know, it's just not there. It's just, when I was growing up there, they had their own movies, they had a newspaper. All that's gone now.
Yeah, it's all suburban, sort of.
It's a little suburban town. You
know? Well, the interesting thing is the points you touched on, like the women's rights and the black rights, that period
gay
that
rights.
We're talking about, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, what happened?
New American rights.
What happened in the universe that opened up that all the changes started happening?
The dawning of the age of Aquarius.
Yeah.
Was it in the stars?
This
so many
is my,
things
my
came
opinion,
together.
Anyway, this is it. Our parents couldn't refuse us anything, as a generality.
Yeah.
Our parents could not, because they grew up in the Depression.
Right.
And they had nothing.
Yeah.
Well,
Then they went to the war where they could have been killed like that.
And they were in for the duration. It wasn't
that's
like
that's right. They were hunkering down. So when the 50s came along and everybody was doing pretty well, you know, lots of folks were doing pretty well, and they had all these fucking kids, you know. I mean, I've heard stories about, see this block of houses, there were 64 kids in this neighborhood in 1955.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank
so they couldn't refuse us anything.
I understand what you're saying, though, but I know, and I bet each of you would agree with me on this, that no matter what was happening in my family, I still felt alien to them.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It was. Yeah. We were special somehow, you know, and it doesn't mean that we were special, it just somehow was implied that when we were little kids, that we were better or special in some way. Yeah. And in my family, my mother actually said that to me.
Yeah.
You know, and that we were, that Charles, you're special.
Yes.
You're not like other kids.
Yeah, I know. But there was also like the 50s and all that repression. It was like a dam. It's like all this stuff just got built up and built up and built up.
Well, everybody had to conform.
Everybody was on conformity and the button-down society.
Well, somewhere,
that they had in the world. And even into the 60s, you know, the early 60s were part of the same thing. It just burst with the Beatles and all that.
I have
acid.
Beatles and acid, exactly.
Yeah.
That
well,
was
it had an extra
life.
Thing,
Vietnam,
I think, in the South, because so many areas in the South really never came out of the Depression until World War II.
Yeah. Oh, more than
so
that.
Jobs
I remember,
opened up.
I remember the pockets of the Depression in Alabama and Mississippi way into the 70s. Yeah, people that didn't have indoor plumbing or even electricity, you know.
That's like
that going on.
Yeah. I describe scenes that I saw in front of my house, born in 1950 in Tifton, Georgia, South Georgia. People go, "Oh, you got that out of a Faulkner novel."
Oh, yeah, sure.
No, people went in mule-drawn wagons because that was the only damn way they had to move the family around.
Listen, when I live out west a certain amount of time. I live in Seattle, and I've lived out there for 25 years, off and on, I dine out on Southern stories all the time. You know, they just can't believe the stuff that I'm telling. It's like you say, like out of a Faulkner novel.
Yeah.
And I started to try to write this stuff down, you know, all these different weird things. And then I had that feeling, well, you know, William Faulkner and every other great Southern writer has already talked about all this stuff.
Yeah.
But then I kind of came to the point of saying, you know, I get a right to a shot at it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying that I'm anything like that, you know, that by any means a good writer, but at least I get a shot at it.
Yeah,
you know, that's all.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember all the stuff about separate bathrooms and all that, I remember going to the auto parts, the junkyard, and walking in with, I don't know who it was, somebody that I was with, my uncle or somebody, we were getting some kind of car part, and they had, these old rednecks were in there, and they had trapped this old black man in there. And they were making him do the shuffle and go, yassa, nasa. And he wouldn't give him his goddamn part so he could get out of there. They just kept him, you know, and called him boy. And he was a grandpa, you know.
My wife just showed, she works at Zoo Atlanta, and she just showed me some old photographs of the zoo in the 50s. And like I said, I got here in the 70s, so by that time the zoo was integrated, and the zoo was free. And so I never thought anything about it, you know. Oh, yeah, the zoo, okay, you know. She said, look at these old pictures of the zoo, honey. This is where, you know, like this line was for black boys and girls and men and women and parents and yada yada, grandfathers, you know. And this was, you know, on this side of the, and I never thought of the zoo being.
That's double irony.
Black and white.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a sea cage. Energy and good feelings like in ecology and children and zoo.
No, that's recent.
Yeah.
The black people get to see the black orangutans and then the white. You know,
oh, yeah.
That divide to the animals.
Well, I remember going to the movies for, you know, what was it, 15 cents or something like that? And all the black kids were upstairs in the balcony, you know?
Well, I got in trouble in Murphy's department store for just curiosity when I was 10 years old. Well, what does the colored water taste like? And somebody saw me, and my father's a doctor, and they about had a fit. That, you know, it's like, oh, you shouldn't be drinking out of that. I'm going to tell your parents.
When I was a little kid, we lived in Florida. And this is what my skin does, you know, under these conditions. So when I was a little kid in Florida, I was as black as could be. And my mom, one time we were riding a bus home from, we were in Fort Lauderdale, and it's like the middle 50s, you know, the latter part of it, when we were on the bus, and the bus driver said, well, you're going to have to sit in the back with her.
Oh, my.
And mom said, why? And he said, because she's colored. And mother goes, no, she's not colored. She's my daughter. And she said that the bus driver gave her this look like, oh, I know who you're sleeping with. And so we sat in the back of the bus, and I had hiccups the whole way home, and they were loud and obnoxious. And mother was so happy. And then we moved from Florida to Memphis, Tennessee for a year, and then Covington, Tennessee. And and that was like a town of 5,000 people. And we were at the Five and Dime store, and there was the water fountains, the white and the colored.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen that before. And so being who I am, I went, colored, and went over and drank from the colored one.
Yeah.
Because I am. Yeah.
You're a Portuguese.